This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Carolina Hurricanes executed a trade today, multiple all-star, one of the best offensive defensemen in the Western Conference. Brent Burns from the San Jose Sharks comes to the Carolina Hurricanes. In exchange, Stephen Lawrence, a goalie prospect, Atu Makaniemi, had a really good year last year. Carolina's got two goalie prospects. They traded one of them. Pyotr Kochetkov, they view as the better one of the two. Really depends on who you talk to. And a conditional third-round pick. Next year, I don't know what the conditions are. We'll have to see what those conditions are. Probably has something to do with, you know, games played, and it might not even be games played this year. It might be games played over time, but we have to check it out. In exchange for Brent Burns, Hurricanes also get back a depth forward, Lane Peterson, who, if I had to guess, I'd say probably is in Chicago this year. Seems minor league-ish to me. One goal in 44 career NHL games over two seasons, one with Arizona and then one with Chicago. Hurricanes still have a lot of work to do, so we'll keep up to date on what they're doing. Again, if you're just tuning in, Vincent Trocheck got a 7-year deal with the New York Rangers. 5.625 million dollars a year. Somebody who is worth more than that, Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, Cover 3 podcast moderator, college sports reporter extraordinaire, my friend, golf enthusiast, and we'll talk about all of that. How are you, my friend?
It sounds like I just got a raise, or at least the market has adjusted in a way that I'm not going to argue with. So I should put you in touch with some people, Adam. Sounds like you could do a great job of representing me to the appropriate parties.
I will be more than happy to sing your praises. All right. A broad question, because I want to talk a little bit about the Big 12. Where do you think we are right now in terms of this, we'll just say, conference game of chicken?
Holding pattern. And one that... It's funny. I've got a very smart friend named Adam Gold who's texted and said, I don't think we're going to have another move for a year. I'm paraphrasing, but right. You know, I was on high alert and you suggested, or maybe even you said you predicted that there wouldn't be another move for a while. And that was a couple weeks ago. And that certainly seems to be where we are on the home front, the ACC. It has come to light. And I think there is the popular thinking that if there was a way out of the grant of rights in the near future or immediately, we might have already heard that, and that those efforts to send your legal teams through it to come back with a number for the decision makers, it is too much to invest for any one of these schools to want to move forward. As it pertains to the Pac-12, I do think that they at least have to enter into that negotiating window to see what their numbers are going to be. Mm-hmm. Those schools that are being targeted by the Big 12 are not going to jump unless they are able to get that information. And we've got at a minimum a 30-day window for them to be able to get that hammered out. And then, you know, after that, once it hits a true open market, you know, maybe we start to see some of the streamers get in. Maybe it does get very interesting. But all that to say that if the Pac-12 is going through its process, if the ACC doesn't seem to have any schools that are going to break the grant of rights anytime soon, you can have as much existential dread as you want, but there is not seeming to be another major move on the horizon, at least in terms of the broad conference realignment topic.
You see, here's the thing where I get to with, like, why is the Big 12 even exploring this? I mean, it would certainly make them at least more stable. I guess maybe that's okay. So if you were able to bring in the two Arizona schools, one has value, I think, Arizona State. The other really doesn't, except for basketball, Arizona. Or Oregon. I mean, Cal and Stanford, whatever.
Yeah, I've heard it's the two Arizonas, Colorado, Utah. And that's really attractive as a four-pack for the Big 12. Of course, you'd love to have Oregon. Of course, you'd love to have Washington. But there is the following advantages, even if you were to only get that package of four, where you get the Phoenix market, and that's a combo play, Arizona, Arizona State, the alums that you've got in the Phoenix area, mm-hmm. that's top 20 in the country. For Colorado, hey, old lovers back together.
Right, you know, absolutely.
Familiarity to yeah. it. And Utah is so much more attractive when you're adding BYU
right.
because you are able to preserve that rivalry, get some travel where your footprint is able to be about the same. So even those four, I understand why the new Big 12 commissioner, who's, you know, coming in hot off Roc Nation,
yeah.
hot off being a part of the sort of NBA circles where there is a lot of inventive thinking. I mean, we can just look at, you know, this midseason tournament. I haven't looked at any of these details. I have no opinions on it, but it seems creative and inventive.
Yeah, I like it.
Play-in tournament, creative, yep. inventive. It makes sense that somebody coming from these circles at the executive level is going to just jump in back. Well, why can't we explore this expansion? Oregon and Washington, I think that right now, them hearing from the Big Ten that the Big Ten is not ready to invite them right now is the best thing to keep the Pac-12 together, because Oregon and Washington are now power players in that room. And if they're leading the charge for the new Pac-12 media rights deal and they're not on the way out the door, then that's the best thing to keep it together. And that might keep those four schools that the Big 12 could be targeting, that might keep them in the Pac-12 as well.
Well, there will not be 12 schools remaining in the Pac-12 if Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah jump to the Big 12. And by the way, does BYU want Utah? It's a rhetorical question. I know the answer is no, but I think they'll just say, yeah, whatever. Because I don't think Utah and BYU necessarily wanted to be in the same league. But that's, although were they once? I think they were both once in the Mountain WAC. West, right? Or WAC? Was it WAC?
I think they might have both been WAC.
And BYU, well, the whole thing is WAC. By the way, did you see the proposal from the Western Athletic Conference in their basketball tournament? All right, for people who didn't see it, let me just set this up, and then we'll talk about it real quick, because it's hysterical. The Western Athletic Conference has decided that the conference standings, and this is a proposal, I don't think it's official yet, that the conference standings will not determine the seeding for the basketball tournament, for the conference basketball tournament, but it will be done based on a statistical formula that takes into account KenPom and the net rating and, I guess, figure skating judges.
Okay. So you and I are on the same page here. This is
what are they doing?
I am a KenPom subscriber. I think that he charges too little for that service. He could charge more for that service, and I still would be there paying for it every single year. That I think is a great way to judge efficiency. It is a great way sure. to judge predictive, you know, like how you would be on a neutral court against sure. another team. But there is something inherent to a conference tournament where I want to see the team that is not efficient be rewarded for winning games in a way that they might get that two seed, right?
Right.
I want to see the team that didn't have a high KenPom rating because they didn't blow teams out. You know, every single game was a one bucket win. Well, yet, you know when that is going to help you out? That's going to help you out in terms of your conference seeding. I am not in favor of going to a full analytics, predictive metrics style when you're talking about a conference tournament. It should be based on your conference record.
I appreciate the Western Athletic Conference just thinking outside the box, but that's a little bit too far. Outside the box. All right, back to the ACC, and you alluded to the grant of rights, and that probably keeping the league together. We're all waiting to see what Notre Dame does, because that's really going to be the tipping point. Still, the carrot, the potential of Notre Dame maybe one day joining the league is still out there. As long as Notre Dame stays independent, I don't think we're going to see anything else major happen. And the ACC's been, at best, we'll just say tied for third in terms of total payout anyway for, like, what, the last 10 years. So this is nothing new. The league has operated, we'll just say, poorer. It's all relative to the Big Ten and the SEC for a while. It's just the gap, like everything else in life, the gap is simply getting wider. But the notion that these schools would be negotiating with the SEC, is it possible that schools could get together as a group to challenge grant of rights with the ACC, or is there really only one school that could do it, and that's Notre Dame?
So have you discussed or have we discussed the truly deep, dark way to get this whole thing to dissolve, where the Big Ten and the SEC meet in a shady back room and they say, you know what? Schools won't have to pay their media rights to the ACC if the ACC doesn't exist.
Right.
How many do you want? How many do I want? Split them up, what, four each? And then all of a sudden, what kind of conference are you even going to be able to hold together at that point?
Right.
Matt Hayes has written a lot recently in the last like couple of days. And one of the things that he reported that stood out to me the most of all of it is that there are university presidents and there are people within college athletics that believe that all of this instability is bad for business.
Terrible.
And it reminds me of like one of the weird quirks that I've discovered even about sort of like our society and our life is like when things are unstable socially, it's bad for business. Mm-hmm. And that corporations and these big, the money, capital T, capital M, would like for things to be stable because you're able to make more money and things are able to operate smoother when things are stable and they will exert their influence as such. And so I think that the stunner of USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten created this massive, you know, wave and all of us just gaming out what the next step is going to be, where this is going to end. And I think that at this point, there are forces, be them university presidents, be them within the conferences, that are just trying to slow the end game, even though we do appear to be barreling there faster than any of us ever expected. I think that you mentioned, is Notre Dame going to challenge the grant of rights? And would that be the one school that would then open things up for everyone else? Could a Clemson, Florida State, and Miami all get together as a group and try to legally challenge the grant of rights in a court? What state are they going to challenge it in? Mm-hmm. How's it going to go? Like, there's so many pieces to that. And the amount of time until the deal is done is so long that I think that is the calculus, where you can have this existential dread of the time being in the future when the amount of money that it would cost to challenge or break free from this ACC deal is lower than the money that you would make at another conference. But I do think that is very far off. And the amount that it would cost not only to pay the exit fee, not only to get out of the grant of rights, but even to just challenge this thing legally is so, it is massive. And it is not something that at the university level, these leadership is looking to do right now.
All right, I want to handle one thing here and then we'll take a break because I have a couple of more things about the ACC and value that I want to get to. But you talked about, because this is something that I have also been thinking about, the overall damage to college football, and this is always about football, we have to understand that. The overall damage to college football as a whole, if we essentially have the power, and not just the power, but all of the attention on two poles. The SEC on one end, if they expand and add four more teams, the Big Ten on the other end, one in the north, one in the south, and we've got 40 teams, and that's it. The damage that does to the rest of college football, I'm not going to be doomsday. It'll recover to a point, but I just think that's overall horrible for the sport in general, because a lot of these schools that are now in these power conferences, like I'm not talking about Vanderbilt, Arkansas, hey man, get used to 5-7 year after year after year after year. Or Texas, get used to 5-7. How's it going to be when you're playing in the NFC East and you keep losing? Because somebody's got to lose. If you're ultimately going to be in these giant leagues, you're not playing anybody else. You're just going to play each other. So the balance sheet says there's got to be as many wins as losses.
Yeah, and if you've got these kind of conference schedules, you're not going to have the non-cons to be able to boost your record,
right,
to be able to give your fans a win to celebrate at home. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Arkansas. I mean, Missouri State's not going to have a date where they can come to visit. Which, by the way, do you know who the head coach is of Missouri State right now?
Who is?
It's Bobby Petrino.
No.
So set your DVR for the SEC Network when Bobby Petrino leads Missouri State into Fayetteville to play the Razorbacks. And I just hope he's wearing that same Sugar Bowl hat he had at the press conference after the accident.
I hope he rides it on a motorcycle. Alone. Alone on a motorcycle.
Alone and safely. Alone and
safely. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, because you mentioned value, ACC schools, value and all that. I am curious, playing this silly game of SEC takes these schools, Big Ten takes these schools, is it possible that the schools, if the Big Ten could choose four schools and the SEC could choose four schools, that they might be four different schools? We'll talk about that with Chip Patterson next. Adam Gold here from my man, Coach Pete DeRuta with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. All right, Coach, simple. When do we start tax planning in retirement?
We should start as soon as possible, because here's one thing, Adam, taxes are not going away.
Right.
And so the game here is we know the rules. A lot of people want to ignore the rules or act like they don't are familiar with them, but the IRS knows the rules. And so when we get to retirement, they're going to reach in and start taking some of their money out of your accounts. So the secret here is to put a force field around as much as possible by strategically moving some of our money to Roth IRA or some of the other vehicles that aren't taxed, like special life insurance policies. You can borrow against your money there and never have to pay tax on your money that you build up inside your cash value. So there are a lot of strategies here. The one strategy that does not work is ignoring it. So let's make sure to not ignore it. The next 10 people will do for you your very own tax and retirement plan that'll help you minimize taxation all the way through retirement.
800-661-7383. All you got is call, or you can text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuta. Hurricanes executed the trade for San Jose Sharks right shot defenseman Brent Burns earlier today. We'll give you more details on that later. And it appears that they are the front runners to sign free agent forward Mason Marchment, late of the Florida Panthers. It's a guy who had 47 points, 18 goals in 54 games a year ago, and scored in bunches last year. Big kid, 27, late bloomer, but I think a good player. So if Carolina gets that taken care of, we'll see what the numbers are. It's not official yet, but we'll see what the numbers are. But that has been reported all across the hockey web. All right, let's get back to Chip Patterson, my friend, Cover 3 podcast moderator, at Chip_Patterson on Twitter. All right, let's. I wanted to talk about value because I made a list a little while ago, a few days ago, about, like, if the SEC was to were to expand and they were to raid the ACC and the Big Ten were to raid the ACC, while, yes, this is about football, we're still probably talking about a different group of schools.
Nerds and jocks.
Say that again?
Nerds and jocks. This is the way you listen. If a television executive had their way, and they're trying to, I mentioned the forces at the university level or within these conferences that are trying to calm the waters and try to allow for a college football world where it is more than 40 teams.
Right.
No, a television executive would tell you that this is what we want to do. We want to get all the nerd schools in the Big Ten. We want to get all the jocks in the SEC. We let them have their own playoffs where all the nerds get to see who gets to be the king nerd and all the jocks get to see who's going to be the king jock. Then we're going to take you on a Monday in January and we are going to sell to America nerds versus jocks at the college level. It is the simplest drama that you could sell to a basic sports fan who cares nothing about the history or traditions of college football. And that is the customer that we're going for with some of these more TV-led realignment moves.
So if you're the Southeastern Conference, you're going for Clemson,
yep,
Florida State,
mm-hmm,
Miami,
mm-hmm,
TV property, right? And who would that fourth be? Would that fourth be Virginia Tech? Would that fourth be Louisville? It's probably one of those two. Or maybe Virginia Tech is attractive to the AC to the Big Ten.
I do not think that while I have great respect for Virginia Polytechnical Institute and University, I do know that they are not on the frat list.
Okay.
You know, the the AAU, you know, the full list of the...
Neither is Nebraska, but that's fine.
They were for a second, but they lost their membership and they're on double secret probation. But, I mean, listen, the AAU is the oldest fraternity of academics, and it's like just as hoity-toity as you would expect. It's got all the Ivies. Mm-hmm. It's got your public Ivies. And I even think that what year you were put in, like it's
University of North Carolina, 1922 initiation.
Yeah, true.
So Duke University, 1919 initiation.
For the Big Ten, UNC, mm-hmm. Virginia.
Yep.
Duke.
Yes.
And Georgia Tech, right?
Yeah. And Georgia Tech just got in. They're a little bit of a new blood in the academic frat. You know, they were 2010 initiation. But remember in the realignment craze of 11, Georgia Tech was like, we're in. Come get us, Jim.
Right. And somebody saying, like, why would Duke go in? This is football. It gets back to our earlier conversation. Somebody has to lose. Duke's already used to that. Don't at me. Don't at me. Somebody's got to lose. And in a way, they're the Notre Dame of not in a way, they are the Notre Dame of basketball. So they bring a value that would help, because football season will end and then something's got to be on the network. Might as well be, like I joked with John Shire earlier. I asked him if he was going to be coaching in the ACC this year.
What'd he say?
He laughed. He's like, I'm pretty sure. But right. At this point, nobody's sure about anything. But I did want to get into the value. Is there anybody else? Like, no. I think NC State could be that fourth team for the Southeastern Conference. I think that we don't spend, if we're just looking at ACC schools, I don't think we spend enough time, and this was my mistake from the beginning in a lot of other situations, we don't spend enough time talking about how, like, supportive and rabid a fan base is. And I think NC State, I think, checks those boxes, because they would be crazy fun in the SEC, even though it's going to suck going 4-8.
NC State and Virginia Tech seem more likely than Louisville for the SEC. I suspect that there would be big Kentucky pushback. North Carolina and Virginia are states where the SEC doesn't have a presence. Mm-hmm. And so it would just be in like North Carolina, state of North Carolina, growing population. Yep. It would be a strategic play by the SEC if we're going to add a fourth school there. But also to your point about value, there's this other side of this that Tom Fornelli has brought up, where he said, look, universities have been making money long before football became a big money business. Mm-hmm. And they're going to figure out ways to be able to insure themselves so that even if this cash cow that is football does end up going away, that they are going to, you know, have themselves in a good position. And I think that there's something about just like getting universities with big alumni bases, mm-hmm. getting universities with big enrollments, getting, you know, for the Big Ten, these research institutions that are coast to coast. Like, the Big Ten knows that the population in the Midwest is dwindling, and there is some part of adding USC and UCLA that is not even about sports, but about advertising the Big Ten to the state of California in a way where you are going to try to get not athletes, or not just athletes, but students to be familiar with your universities and consider coming to them. And when I started to really game that out, that big, like, not just 10, 20-year picture, but that, like, 50-year picture, it started to really change the way that I look at a lot of this expansion, especially the expansion as it's being driven or motivated at the university president level.
All right, let's get to what we really care about. I can't believe we waited 28 minutes for this. The Open Championship starts in, what, Charlotte's own Webb Simpson is off the first tee in 24 hours. He's in the first group. I think he'll hit the second tee shot, if I'm not mistaken.
Wait, isn't it in 12 hours, right?
24? Yeah, 12 hours from now. Okay. 12 hours from now, Webb Simpson is off the first tee, Charlotte's own. All right, so I'll just start. Who you got?
Don't like it. On CBSSports.com, I went with Cam Smith. Great short game.
Yep.
You know, good wedges, great at 3-putt avoidance, you know, trying to limit the damage. A plus value player in the wind. I don't run my own models for that, but the people who do say that he is, you know, like top 11 or 12 in the field in terms of playing in windy conditions. And there is some correlation between success at Augusta National and success at St. Andrews. And he's had some success at Augusta National. I will say to your unprecedented statewide platform, some of that pick absolutely has to do with knowing that the rest of the post was going to be filled with Rory.
Okay.
It was going to be filled with Jordan Spieth. Like, if Rory or Jordan Spieth win, I'm going to be happy. I'm going to love it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be cool with it. But my pick, you know, in trying to be a little bit different as well, was Cam Smith.
My only fear about Cam Smith, and I think all the things you said about Cam are correct, he is definitely prone, by the way, as are Spieth and Rory, to big numbers. And while I think the scoring will be pretty low, I don't know that the scoring is going to be as low as everybody has been fearful of, like 25 under par winning the Open Championship. I think the number will be somewhere in the teens, maybe 16 or 17 under par. But, man, Cam could make a 6 or a 7 anywhere.
So at the Scottish Open, his second round was a 75, but then rounds 1, 3, and 4 were 68 or better.
Yeah, no, I think this week is going to come down to not really putting, because I don't think the Open Championship is ever a putting contest, but it's going to be a creativity contest. So I like Cam Smith. I don't like Cam Smith to win, but I like Cam Smith to be there. I love Jordan Spieth this week. I think the wind is supposed to be kind of down. So if the wind is down, who's the best player?
Rory McIlroy.
Right.
Yeah.
If the wind is down, he's the best player. So we'll see. I asked this of Jason Sobel's coming on with us a little bit later on. And I talked to Jason a lot from the Action Network. I just wonder, is Rory McIlroy exhausted from carrying the water for the, and I'm not using this in a negative term, he has to be exhausted over the last 2 months. He's been the face of golf for the last 2 months.
Yeah, but I say this with love in my heart for the people that are especially over there right now. That man, again, this is not a hate. Mm-hmm. That man has a battery in his back with plenty of Rory-friendly media. And you know what I'm saying? I don't want to get into that, but there are a lot of writers. There are a lot of very good writers that love Rory. And my friend Kyle Porter does a great job of defending why the media likes Rory. And some of it is that he does take you inside the game of golf and that he has been more revealing. And as the answers have gotten less and less colorful, and as the answers have been washed down and watered down with sponsorship and everyone trying to be as bland as possible, and Bryson DeChambeau sounding like a NASCAR driver when he walks off the 18th green, that Rory McIlroy is able to provide the kind of insight that a lot of others don't. And when you get that from one of the best in the sport, you're going to be attracted to that. And I just think that all of these one-on-ones, all of these interviews, all of these stories and features that are all coming together, it's just gassing him up more. It's just putting an even bigger chip on his shoulder. And it is giving him energy that could help him from being exhausted or overexerted at this point in the process.
Just all he's got to do is hang on for 4 more days. Just suck it up for 4 more days. If he can do that, the wind stays down. Rory is by far the favorite. I love that group, Rory, Colin Morikawa, Xander Schauffele. Wow. Schauffele could not be hotter. He can't stop winning right now. I mean, he's obviously going to be there. I think Morikawa will as well. Do you have a dark horse that you would like to tout?
Okay. Robert McIntyre, 25 years old. He's got 2 top 10 finishes and his only 2 Open Championship starts. And at all 9 of his major championship starts, he's made the cut at every single one of them. So long runway ahead for him. I think that he's the dark horse. And then I'll give you the one that you got to jump on the other side, because this is another question we have to answer for that CBS Sports story. Who's the star that definitely won't win? I feel bad just being so antagonistic about this, but Patrick Cantlay is going to win a major championship before I have him anywhere close to winning a major championship, because that man is too good at golf for how comparatively poor his finishes have been at major championships.
Yeah, Patrick Cantlay will backdoor a top 10. That's what I will say with Patrick Cantlay. Tiger Woods, better or worse than 25th?
Worse.
Will he make the cut?
Yes, we'll make the cut. I think I said top 40, and maybe I might have said top 30, but the idea is I think he grinds to a made cut. I think he ping-pongs between birdies and bogeys on Saturday. Then he just empties the tank on Sunday. And if you're one of the lucky few up at 3 a.m. to watch him go on like six-hole run that he's got in that will send him shooting up the final leaderboard, I think he shoots something in the 60s on Sunday to get into the top 40, top 30.
I feel seen. Chip Patterson, you're the best, my friend. CBSSports.com covers college sports. Cover 3 podcast at Chip_Patterson. We'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Sounds good. Y'all be well.
Oh, man. You knew we were going to get to the Open. We've got to get to the Open. It is on, if you have Peacock, it's on at 1:35.
Oh, okay.
This morning. I do not have Peacock.
I do not either.
So I will not be awake until 4 when coverage begins on, I think it's USA. Which, why do we have Golf Channel if coverage is on USA? I understand they're trying to make USA a thing.
Yeah.
But why do we have Golf Channel again if we're not putting the Open on it?
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcast.
All right, let's get to half.
Entertainment.
5 on the board today.
Yeah, by the way, are you going to do some hockey signings?
I will, actually.
Does Tampa have any money left?
I don't think so, because they agreed to a deal with Anthony Cervelli. 8 years at 6.25, if I remember correctly, is what I saw.
Yeah, Cervelli gets $50 million over 8 years. That's one.
Yeah, 6.25 over 8 years. Chernak, $5.2 million over 8 years. Sergachev, $8.5 million a year over 8 years.
Hey, those are cornerstone guys.
Yeah.
100%. But it probably means that Andre Palat is done.
Probably.
Done there.
Well, again, we mentioned a little bit ago, Mason Marchment apparently in talks with Carolina, potentially on a 4-year deal. Have not heard anything regarding that official yet.
Nor have I.
Carolina Hurricanes did announce that general manager Don Waddell will be available for media availability at 3:00 today. And I believe WREL Sports Fan will be streaming that live, from my understanding. So you can watch it there.
Real quick, you mentioned the Lightning.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about how much money they've given out.
Mm-hmm.
According to Cap Friendly, which, if you're interested in, you know, hockey salary cap and things like that, that's
how
a great,
it all works. Yep.
Great site. The Lightning have roughly $79 million committed, not for this year, but for next year to 14 players.
Oh.
The salary cap will likely be around $84 million.
I think it might go up slightly.
Next year, I think the 3 years in a row, it's basically a flat cap.
Yeah.
I think it's going to go up like a million. So I think the cap will be about $84 million in 23-24. So they'll have $5 million with which to sign 5 players.
Okay.
6 players.
It's a lot of entry-level contracts.
A lot of rookies.
A lot of entry-level contracts.
A lot of rookies making the Tampa Bay Lightning.
All right, so we did hear we broke the story. I'm going to break it. But we reported earlier about how Carolina Hurricanes did trade for San Jose Sharks defenseman Brent Burns. Along with Brent Burns came Lane Peterson. And going to San Jose was Etu Makaniemi, big-time goalie prospect for the Hurricanes. Also going is Stephen Lawrence in a 2023 conditional third-round pick. I'm wondering, because in 2023, with the Tony DeAngelo trade, the Carolina Hurricanes do have two third-round picks. It could be the condition of maybe that bumps up eventually to the 2024 second-round pick that they got from the Flyers. Right. Maybe that's what it could be. But Canes aren't going to not have a pick in the third round in 2023. Not that it matters a whole lot, but it does matter because you know you never know who you're going to find there in the draft.
They're all assets.
Yes, they are all assets for sure. Now, here's something I do want to bring up.
I hope you have a great Wednesday.
Yes, I do hope you have a great Wednesday. As I hit the wrong button. I do want you to have a great Wednesday. But yes. I want to play this cut of audio. Baker Mayfield spoke with the media yesterday. First time really actually coming to the state of North Carolina. Hasn't experienced much here in the state, including Bojangles.
I'm looking forward to having my first meal at Bojangles. I haven't had that yet, but I've been told that I need to do that as soon as possible. So I'll probably wait a little bit. It's not exactly on the training camp diet, but I'm looking forward to it.
All right. What I want to put together for Baker Mayfield, for Brent Burns, Mason Marchman, whoever, all these athletes, the people that are coming to the state of North Carolina for the first time. Here's something that I think needs to get done. Okay. We need to put together like a starter kit. For these guys.
A starter kit for welcome to North Carolina?
Welcome to North Carolina, like starter kit or just like a welcome, like a gift basket, whatever it is. Right. But in this.
Boiled peanuts?
Okay, well, boiled peanuts can be part of it.
No,
okay,
sure.
But what it needs to be included, a three-piece Supreme from Bojangles. Has to be in there.
Okay.
Three-piece Supreme. Okay? Krispy Kreme donuts need to be in there. I know you hate them, but they have to be in there.
Just don't.
No, yeah, you hate them. It's fine.
Whatever.
That's fine. That's all you
cotton candy.
That's fine. Krispy Kreme donuts, some Texas Pete, some cheer wine needs to be in there.
Okay.
Has to be in there. Also, there needs to be a map of the entire western part of the state and all like the mountain range, everything out there, like how to get to Linville Gorge, how to get to Asheville, how to get to those places out west.
Okay.
Also, all the best beaches to go to in the state of North Carolina, not the Outer Banks.
What they're all called, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right? A pronunciation guide.
Oh, my gosh.
I need a pronunciation guide. It's Curry Beach.
Mebane. Right, it's Curry.
It's Mebane. Right. It's Curry Beach. It's Mebane. It's Greenville. Okay? Like, that. We need to have that, too.
We had a soccer trip to Wilmington. And we had time off in between game, our first day's games. Mm-hmm. We had like an early morning game, like 8 o'clock. And then our next game wasn't until 6:30.
Oh, wow.
Go figure. So we were going to go to the beach. So we were hanging around talking. I'm like, let's go to Curry Beach. It's quieter down there, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, where's that? I'm like, it's just south of Carolina Beach. It goes, well, I see Cure Beach. I'm like, no, that's pronounced Curry.
Yeah, Curry Beach.
Right.
Yeah, Mebane. Greenville. We need a pronunciation guide of all the proper places.
Bahama. Yeah. It's Bahama. It's not Bahama.
Yeah, Bahama.
Right.
So also needs to be included because we got to get them tied into the sports culture here in the state of North Carolina as well. Need to have a video that has the highlights of NC State and their national championship in the 80s. Jim Valvano running around the floor. Mm-hmm. Michael Jordan shot in 82. Need to have Christian Laettner's shot against Kentucky. We need to see the NC State punting to Gio Bernard. Like, we need to have all these things in there.
You need Randolph Childress.
Yes.
Owning Shamon Williams. Right, with Shamon Williams?
It was Shamon. We need Chris Paul, Julius Hodge.
Oh, yes.
Just need to have that moment to show them that.
Talk about boiled peanuts.
Yes. So those are things that they need to be included in a North Carolina starter kit. And feel free to call in or message us at the Fan Rookie at
what
Gold
belongs
Fan.
What belongs in the starter kit?
What belongs in a starter kit? Actually, you know what? Some hot dogs, some Bright Leaf Red hot dogs, baby. A jar of Mount Olive pickles.
Oh yeah, Mount Olive gets it.
Mount
done.
Olive pickles.
Mm-hmm. So, I like the sweet relish.
Yeah, all these things that need to be included.
Salad cubes,
pick.
Very nice,
there
very
you
good.
Go. So I don't know what other things could be included. Well, I do. Maybe some barbecue. I mean, barbecue has to be in there. But I think we need to give them a sample of both Eastern and Lexington style.
I like both. I really do. I like both, and mm-hmm. I don't have a preference one versus the other. Mm-hmm. It really depends on mood. You can think that's crazy, but I like both. I don't like mustard-based.
Oh, yeah, it's South Carolina. Get that stuff out of here.
Not interested, but I like both Eastern and Western styles of barbecue.
So, yeah.
I'm a fan.
I think that's what we need to give the people.
Okay.
And also, a tour of the ACC headquarters before they move to Charlotte.
Let them get on the RV.
Yes.
That's where I want the headquarters to be. Just in a recreational vehicle. But it's time to add them up, and we have been going north and north and north of late.
Place your bets, place your bets. Here we are. I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Death! Okay, you can owe me. I owe you one.
I'm up over 1,000 this week already. We've had 2 days.
Yeah.
So, Francisco Lindor, fifth inning run scoring triple, handled all my total bases. I needed three or more from Lindor, plus 310. Lakers won their summer league battle with the Clippers at plus 170. Mm-hmm. It's a good day yesterday. Plus, I have golf wagers pending. I am at plus 4695. People, get on board.
What are we doing here?
Get on. I am making this easy. Christmas is taken care of. All right. You start.
All right. I'll do a futures bet. Colin Morikawa, top 10 at the Open, plus 300.
Plus, that's pretty good value for a top 10 for Colin Morikawa.
I know.
Hadn't played great. I think he's almost at 50-1 right now to win.
All he needs one good weekend.
Right. No, I'm with you. He's a supreme ball striker. No problem at all with that pick. All right. I'm going to go top 20, Ryan Fox. Ryan Fox is an Australian who seems to be on the leaderboard of the European Tour every single week. Ryan Fox to top 20 at plus 225.
Okay. Netherlands, Portugal, women's Euro.
By the way, Germany with the upset of Spain.
Yeah, 2-0.
2-0.
I picked a draw in that game. But
you did. You
oh,
did.
Well, what can I do?
Spain would have taken it.
Netherlands minus a goal and a half against Portugal, plus 110. Netherlands heavy favorite.
At plus 110.
Ooh. Minus a goal and a half.
All right. Well, good luck. Good luck to you.
Thanks. Hey, well, last time I picked against the spread, England versus Norway, crushed that one.
Hey, no question about that. All right. Your 2019 Open champion at Royal Portrush, which is, it's not where they are next year. I think it's where they are in 24. Shane Lowry, top five, plus 450.
Go for it.
Shane Lowry, top five at plus 450.
Okay. By the way, your Mets are up right now, 4-0 over the...
Oh, that's right. They were playing an afternoon game.
That's right. Fifth inning.
Yeah, I was not wagering on baseball today. I said all of my wagers would be on the Open Championship. I've got already two outstanding.
All right. Yankees... Reds tonight. Anthony Rizzo to hit a homer, plus 340.
Anthony Rizzo. Rizzo's good, man. Yankees are good. Although, see, the Yankees blew at a 3-0 lead in the ninth inning and lost. First time all year they lost a game leading entering the ninth inning.
So I saw the stat. Reds were 0-49 trailing when they were trailing going into the ninth inning. Yankees were 49-0 leading going into the ninth inning.
Right.
Sure enough.
There's
Reds,
only
Reds win it.
One team in baseball now that is undefeated when leading entering the eighth. The Mets.
Mets?
Yeah, which could end today, to be honest. What are they in the fourth inning today?
Fifth.
Fifth inning, 4-0 Mets. Look, I didn't get a chance to watch yesterday, and obviously I'm not watching today. The Monday game was simply a well-played ball game. I absolutely love the way those two teams play. I think it's going to go through one of those two teams. I think either the Braves or the Mets will be in the World Series. I really do. I like Atlanta's team a lot. Absolutely. Wait, hold on one second. I want to make this. Did I make a mistake here? Mm-hmm. Oh, I think my friend Brad points out that Ryan Fox is a New Zealander, not an Aussie.
You can't mess that up, man.
Not to them.
Nope.
Not to them. We can't tell the difference, but they can. But that doesn't change the fact that I think Ryan Fox is a good bet to finish in the top 20. And Rory McIlroy will be your first round leader.
Okay.
Plus 2,000.
Oh, okay.
I don't understand why the number's that big. He's plus 900 to win. Plus 2,000, first round leader. So give me Rory McIlroy. I already have Sam Burns at plus 4,500 to win, and Jordan Spieth, the guy I think is going to win, at plus 1,600. So there you go.
You're just covering all your bases.
I'm just throwing darts at the wall. Right now, everything's coming up aces. Telling you, man. You want me to blow on your dice? I'll blow on your dice. What?
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.